All right, so this is the Center for the Study of Religion and the City Coronavirus Relief Efforts. It is August 15th, 2020, and we are doing interview 2 of the Segurite Land Trust food distribution efforts. This is Abel Gomez with Ariel Mejia interviewing Najoni. So on our previous call, we talked about the Segurite Land Trust in general, where it came from, the work that it does in community. And we talked about the ways in which things have shifted as a result of the coronavirus to focusing attention on individuals directly who are in need. And that has taken the form of this food distribution process. We also talked about some of the ways that folks in the organization navigated the uncertainty of what was going to come, and then the shifts to working with particular distributors and navigating ways in which this new initiative would go forward. So I wanted to start today by talking and asking about what the biggest struggles have been for Segurite as a result of social distancing requirements.
Like as a whole, or just like specific to the, okay. I would say that we're when we usually have our staff meetings, they're in person. So we're used to getting together in like a small room, and we go over like a lot of the things that need to be done that week, but then we also have a chance to see each other, to share a meal together. We usually try to get food for that. That's, once a week together in the staff meeting, and then sometimes we celebrate birthdays. So we're missing a lot of those, like together, like that community gathering aspect. And it's been hard, I think, on all of us as a group, and then individually, just also like people being isolated from others. So it's always nice when we're able to do. Yeah, I'm trying to turn this off. There we go. It's always nice when we're able to like connect with each other, and it just seems more special during these times. And then with the food distribution, it's another thing. I think I mentioned that too, like being able to see people throughout the neighborhood, even if it's like hello and like you're driving by, or like you like drop the stuff and then like you walk away from their front door, it's still a nice exchange. So I'd say like during this time, we're used to being able to gather together and have our staff meetings, do ceremonies. We've actually had a couple fires at the Arbor in East Oakland for, there was a board member that passed away for Segurite. Also another, a young person in our community that passed away. And yes, we did two fires, and we just said, if anybody needs to come over and pray, make an offering, that's available to them. And it was nice because, it's all outside, so we were able to do that safely, but we definitely feel limited in like being able to do our ceremonies and gathering. And we're used to inviting people out onto the land and working with, you know, bringing on volunteers and working with them in all the different sites. So a big challenge is not being able to do those same in-person things that allow us to feel more connected to our community.
I have a question. So do you guys do like Zoom calls?
Mm-hmm. They're my favorite. No. Yeah, we do Zoom calls. We actually don't do that many, but like for my position specifically, like I'm doing some admin stuff, and I'm also doing like stuff on the land. So like I'll have the staff meeting, I'll have the admin meeting, then I'll have like a farm meeting with the farm that we're at, conflict resolution with for that farm, and then there's another organization where I'm like representing in that I'm representing Segurite in that space. So it's like I feel like I get a lot of Zoom meetings. But that was a side note. But yeah, we do Zoom meetings, and initially that was great being able to see each other and to check in, because there was a huge break in not seeing each other. But then after a while, we noticed that some people were getting burnt out from being on these Zoom meetings. So while like technology is amazing and it's keeping us together, we're also recognizing how like we have to be very mindful of how it impacts our health. And you know, what you were saying about being like after that 2 hour meeting, it's kind of like, ugh, like another Zoom meeting. Like that's what it's like turning into for some of us. But we also appreciate the fact that we're like able to see each other's faces and hear each other's voices.
We, Ariel and I talked to someone from the Amamutsen tribal band, and they were telling us about the ways in which, even though the difficulty with social distancing has made like Zoom a thing that people do, one of the things for them is that it is allowing people to, from very far away who don't live within their tribal territory, to communicate. Mm-hmm. But it seems like maybe there's something a little bit different with Segurite. I mean, from what I understand, I know that there was an online, there were a series of like online programs that Segurite did. It was like Seeds of Hope or...
speaker series.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because that seems like a kind of a new thing, right?
Yeah. So I think this has been like in the works for a while. So Fui is leading that. And we've mostly focusing on local people. We've had like some people, like for example, Kaliba Nali that we had on there out from the Navajo Nation, but mostly focusing on people here in the Bay. And each week so far we've had topics on mutual aid, like radical mutual aid or quote unquote radical, and how like we often need to take things into our own hands, because whether it's the U.S. government or in other people's cases, tribal governments, like they don't necessarily have the on the ground knowledge and the urgency to like to get these things done. And then we also had another conversation about one of them was called, I think, Women Warriors. And it was looking specifically at sacred sites and sacred spaces. So we've internally been talking about like how can we get resources out there and how can we do it in a way that isn't a lot of unappreciated work on our part. So we're talking about like having, you know, white folks and like though there are relatives and like we're all relatives, sometimes people come up and expect something without necessarily having a reciprocal relationship or without building a relationship. So I think that's one way that we're doing that, where it's like it's accessible knowledge and it's very important for the Native community and for the local communities of color here, because it's allowing us to like come together in this virtual space. And then it's also very educational for like white folks and white presenting folks that may need to learn and do some work on their part.
And you said that this was something that was kind of talked about or in the works, but then would you say that because of the situation with social distancing, that kind of became the thing that kind of emerged as a result of that, that because of social distancing, it's like, okay, boom, we're going to be doing this thing.
Yeah. I think that's what really like pushed it. Cause it was kind of like, well, there was a break and it was kind of like, well, we have a lot of time without like going out. So I think that opened up some time for Fui and like Karina to get it started, and then we brought it to the staff meeting. They were like, hey, let's just do Zoom. Got a pro Zoom account. But definitely, yeah, I think in that time where we had the shelter in place, it was kind of like, well, we need something to stay connected. So that was our response.
So you discussed something called Women Warriors. Can you like elaborate on what that like is?
Yeah. So I'm trying to recall the questions from that call. So we had a couple of different guests, Uma Puakas, a leader from
the Kanaka Maoli?
Yes, Kanaka Maoli. I was like, something came along. So we had a leader from there, and then we also had a leader from up north. Yeah, I'm the terrible.
Of, Callie's,
when
I listened to it as well.
Okay, well, maybe you can. I'm trying to bring up the thing right now. I forget the other person we had. We also had Desiree sing a song, and then we had some of the singers from the Nakamaloi Singers. Did they offer? Maybe I'm confusing two of these things. But that was specifically about like how these different women in their, and also Karina being the third person, even though Karina's Sugora table, we're like interviewing Karina as one of these people. So Mauna Kea, the Shaw Mounds in the Bay Area, and Run for Salmon, you know, protecting our water sources, protecting our sites and land, sacred land, and things that are sacred in our life, such as the seafood and the animals on the land. So that one was specifically about like how women in a lot of these indigenous societies all over the world, not just here, but a lot of them are matriarchal, and you see how these matrilineal societies are doing a lot better than like the US, or, you know, as far as like how they care for their people. So women warriors, because all of this work, even though it may not seem like, when you think warrior, you think like aggressive and like manly and stuff, like even though it may not seem like, oh, we're going to war, but it's like, well, you think about it, a lot of these things that are inhibiting our ways of life are, it's waging war on Native communities, waging war on communities of color. So things that are being taken from us violently, it's like, well, you have to be a warrior if you're going to fight that. So that part of the series was all about like how these different leaders in their communities, how they work together, doing events together, supporting each other from different locations, and also supporting other women across the US and Americas. You know, how can we learn to protect our sacred sites? And yeah, basically that, yeah.
Which then also connects to the whole concept of rematriation, which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
So you talked about these Zoom calls that people have been able to join, and I was able to listen to you, to the one about the warrior women. But are there other things that y'all have done to remain connected as an organization during all of this with the virus?
I'd say that a little bit with like social media presence being engaged. So we now have a team of people that are specifically working on managing social media, whether that's looking at how people have tagged us, specifically Instagram, or shared things on Facebook. So it's like being able to engage with people through that and answering questions. Though we've had, I think, a slowdown on the amount of requests we get for like speaking engagements and consultation and educational consultation, those are coming up a lot more, and we see that's like another way that we're engaging with others and being able to, whether that's like being awarded something or doing a presentation for something, like being able to answer questions and have that time for Q&A. So a lot of community members are on these seeing hope calls, or they join other things where we're being rewarded, or they may join something that we're presenting to another group. And oftentimes there's like this Q&A at the end. But aside from that, I think our biggest thing is like in-person stuff. So it's really hard on us that we can't like really bring in volunteers, and we're moving towards that, but we want to do that slowly, and we're also looking at how other organizations are doing that. For instance, at the farm specifically, we have a farm stand that we just opened 2 months ago, and to prepare for that, we have a bunch of different people in that community to prepare for that. One person went out and just like observed all the farmers markets and just going around the Bay Area. And then this person also had a lot of knowledge being a nurse in his profession. And then being able to like connect back with the community and all of us having our different skills and knowledge. And then we created this safety protocol for that farm stand specifically. And then Segurite, from being involved in that process, we've been able to use a lot of those same protocols for our own food distribution and for the office. But we're still like on hold about volunteers because we want to make sure that we're protecting our community. And just looking at how disproportionately certain communities are affected, looking at East Oakland and the families that we serve. We don't want to, whether people are immunocompromised or they're just vulnerable because they just already haven't had access to food, or they're, you know, they're struggling in other ways. Like, we don't want to add another thing by potentially being an exposure for them. So we're moving very slowly with the volunteering.
So have you guys, like, this, like we were talking about volunteers, have you guys like maybe talked about any possible ways to have volunteers in the future with coronavirus going on, or it's still like up in the air?
Still up in the air. I'd say that it comes up every now and then because we're like, it would be great if we could have people to help deliver food that way. But where we notice how there we could get in, we can bring in some new volunteers that could help us like virtually or remotely. So specifically with the administration team, there are a few people that have reached out and they're like, hey, like I have X years, or I am a designer, or I do accounting, and they're offering like, hey, I want to do some hours with you all. And then some people that are maybe their high school or college and they want to do some volunteer hours as well. So I think that's more likely to happen first before the in-person things. But now that I think I realize for the Albany, that the Giltrack Farm, we're still bringing in volunteers because we have that whole thing set up for Earth Day. And so there's like a 20-minute video that people can watch to see all the different steps. There's a 45-minute not in person, but you could be online or you can come to the farm and like go through a slideshow, going through all the steps, and then someone will be there to like walk you through them. So it's like almost like 3 hours of training in order to be like okay to be on the farm. So we are accepting volunteers through the Guild Tract. We're still holding off on it, but like that's like the exception because it's going through this other community space that we're in and that we're a part of.
So you talked a little bit earlier about some socially distant ceremony that's happened. Related to a loss, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how Segurite, or to what extent Segurite is observing cultural or religious celebrations or ceremonies in this time.
So far I think we've just had those two gatherings. We did have a conversation just with a few people in the staff because we wanted to like discuss something, and it just wasn't working necessarily in the Zoom meetings because we had the larger staff meeting at the admin meeting, but then we needed a more like intentional circle for this conversation. So we got together at the Arbor and we're able to sit. Like distanced in that space. And it was nice because it was a particularly hard conversation for us. And it's kind of like, well, being in this space that is spiritually important and important to Karina's tribe was definitely something that was grounding for us all. And the plant giveaway, and we scheduled time for people to come and pick up plants. Uh-oh, is my internet missing?
So the last thing that we heard was that you were gathering in the arbor and that the arbor mm-hmm. is an important space for Karina's tribe.
Yeah, okay. So we that for that conversation, which was not like intense, but definitely we had to be very intentional about it. Like, it was great to be in that space because it's very grounding for a lot of people, and it's spiritually important for the tribe and also other tribes in this area, being that it's one of the few spaces, not just for Karina's tribe, but like other bands of the Ohlone people in other Bay Area tribes that haven't had those structures in over 200 years. So we had that one meeting, we had the two fires for those people that have passed on, and then we had the day where we gave away plants and people were able to schedule a time, and we specifically asked for elders and young kids, high school and younger, to come to pick up a plant. And we had medicinal plants, so we had tobacco and sage, and then we also had some starts for vegetables and greens. That wasn't like, we didn't necessarily invite people in, but we had things set up so people can come in. And there was also someone dropped off sage. So there's an older couple that dropped off sage, so we were able to do that exchange as well. But yeah, that was it.
So you said high schoolers or like younger people pick up the plants. Is there like a specific reason why high schoolers or like younger people pick up the plants, or?
Yeah, so with the elders, we wanted to make sure that they had access to medicine, and we tend to, like, in the community, at least here in the Bay Area, which I think is the largest, like, urban Native population in the U.S., we tend to see a lot of the culture bearers being the elders in the community, and it's usually, like, an older cousin or a grandparent or an uncle, older relative or community member, and there's definitely, like, this gap, like, generational gap where, like, the grandkids or, like, high school, grade school age kids aren't receiving a lot of this traditional knowledge, and not having the same like awareness and consciousness as a lot of older folks that may have like lived through certain like movements and actions, or grew up in a tribal area. So we think that it's also, just as we engage with their elders and we do things to protect them, we think it's very important to engage with the youth and make sure that we do protocol with the youth. So we invited. We collaborate with our West Silicon Garden, so they've been coming out to some of our different sites, and we want to make sure that we keep that connection, because most of these kids aren't, like, I was one of those kids myself, and it's like I didn't really learn about my background until high school, so we think it's very important, and just like getting to know who you are and to know these things, and also that community, I think is what like holds a lot of people, and yeah, because I think some people don't always have access to that language that they're from, or that sometimes they don't know which tribe, or some things are lost, or just their parents or grandparents are afraid to pass it on. So a lot of kids have to search for it. And then oftentimes it's the intertribal community that are teaching them, oh, well, this is how like a lot of us in general pray. It's not specific to any tribe. This is how a lot of us dance, not specific to any tribe. So we have that focus on the youth because we want to make sure that there's not that gap anymore, and that they have the access to the knowledge if they want it.
So part of what I'm hearing is that on the one hand, there is deep ties to Ohlone tribal people and community. And on the other hand, the organization really also serves as a kind of hub for all of these urban native people to also connect to culture and land and tradition. Would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah, and I think the hub, like more, not necessarily Segorite, but like just this area and having, just looking at the history for Oakland and how a lot of the centers that are offering services to Native people out here, they begin in the 70s through federal funding. And then this is, you think about Alcatraz and when that was happening, other liberation movements happening at the same time. And now a lot of these centers are where the kids are going to get this knowledge. So I'd say that we're one part of that. So we have like the health centers, the friendship houses, Oakland, San Francisco. I think other places. Yeah, there's like some different, and then like CRC, American Indian Child Resource Center. And I feel like there's another place. And then there used to be a school as well. So I feel like the kids in these communities are usually like, my aunt works in the San Francisco Health Center. Like my mom works at this one. I go to IFH for dance practice. I've gone to Stronghold Conference, or I've gone to GONA. That was, I think they move it every year, but like it happens in Marin Headlands. When I went, at least. So I noticed like a lot of these kids are in the same communities and they'll maybe go to one center or go to that one, or for like Karina being like doing all the work that she's done in different organizations, including CRC, like she has a lot of people that she's mentored. So sometimes it's just like maybe a youth doesn't go to a certain center, but they're still in contact with Karina and they like call her for advice and guidance.
Well, I think it's really cool that these kids have a place to like know, like kind of like their culture in a way. So I think that's really cool and helpful.
Ariel, do you want to ask a question or do you want me to go?
You can go.
Okay. So you mentioned, Najoni, the food distribution efforts as a result of, let me back up. So as a result of coronavirus, there are a number of things that Segorite has done to respond. So those include the food distribution, the Zoom calls the Zoom programming that people can join and hear different perspectives and get access to resources. And you also mentioned a handful of gatherings. Are there other sorts of things that Segorite has done? Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Which of those do you think y'all will continue to do once the shelter in place is lifted?
I think so. Well, I mean, for the gatherings that will always, especially once that's going to be like all the time. but I'd say one thing that is new and that will continue would definitely be the Seeding Hope series, because it has such a wide range of like who we can access, and the fact that it these will be recorded and they'll be accessible online, and if people are able to tune in, they can call in from anywhere. In that we can also look at, even though we're focusing on local, but maybe it's local, but it's still like 5 hours from here, like being able to connect with others that may be a little far away transportation wise. And then for the food distribution, I'd want to say that we will continue this, but We are receiving our things through a grant that ends in December. So I think that that will evolve into something else, and we want to be able to make our own products. So we things that we've been doing for ourselves, we want to be able to offer that to others. So we have fire cider that we've learned to make, some canning of different fruits and vegetables that we've been doing, and tinctures and salves that we've been learning from other organizations and individuals. So our goal is to be able to have the capacity and also the space to do a lot of these things, and be able to package them. So if we want to give a gift to someone, or we want to sell some of these things to others, we're able to do that.
Did you say, what did you say, like, what is it called? Fire cider? Or what is that?
That is, I think, let me go find the bottle, actually. So this one was made with garlic, onion, ginger, turmeric, horseradish, jalapeno, cinnamon, grapefruit, orange, and raw apple cider vinegar. So this is a little bottle. And I've just been like, every now and then, sometimes when my throat feels scratchy, or even when I'm just kind of like, let me take it because I feel like I'm going to get sick. And then I just put a little bit in. Excuse me, it burns a lot. But definitely, I'd say the vinegar smell is the strongest. And then you smell like the garlic. And mostly the garlic, yes. It smells like kind of like garlic and orange juice with apple cider. But it has all these other things in it that are great for you as well, whether they're like, what's the word, antibacterials, or just great for you. Like garlic, for instance, my grandma would just like, she would just eat whole garlic, just eat, my mom too, and just like, ew. But then I tried it, I was like, this is actually really good for you. Turmeric, that's good for, what's the word, inflammation. So a lot of people put it in like their face mask, their hair mask, or in their tea. So it's really good for like your inflammation in your face and in the other parts of your body. I'm just very excited.
So does it kind of help with like your immune system in a way?
Yeah, a lot of these are like good, like natural immunity boosters, like instead of taking Emergency, which has like a bunch of different ingredients, it's like these are just straight to the point, just kind of like, well, you know, like how a lot of the fruits that we eat are good, like natural antioxidants. But this is just like a more like everything together kind of.
Yeah, I think I've friends of mine make fire cider, and it's like when I taste it, it's like it feels like it just like burns any of the stuff that's not good, just like it burns right. It and then you're good.
Yeah. And another thing that I've been doing, one of my friend, she's from Brazil, her dad usually brings back propolis. Have you ever heard of propolis? So like that's really good too. And then I have a friend that's learning a lot about like traditional, for small ailments like cold or fever, like ways to heal that. And she mixes honey with propolis, and you spray that, and then it's really good for sore throats, or if you if some people have like problems with their tonsils, people get a lot of like strep, I don't know, tonsillitis, I think that's the word, when it gets inflamed, but yeah, it helps with your with the bacteria in your throat too.
That's so cool. I've never heard of fire cider. I'm like, wow, that's like different.
Hey, me too. And I learned natural, about it this year. Yeah.
That's good. Do they like sell this at like grocery stores or like?
No.
So you guys just make it, or like, what do you like?
I don't know how to make it. Actually, I know that Janella, one of the directors, co-directing with Karina, she knows how to make it, and then like two other people. But I assume that it's like Am I freezing again?
No, you're good.
Okay, I kind of like slowed down. I assume that it's kind of like, what's the word? Like aging, like you know how wines, I'm thinking of plum wine, for instance, you put like a fruit in an alcohol and it turns into a wine. I think it's like that.
Yeah,
there we go. Yeah. Yeah, you should try making some. Just get some apple cider vinegar and then just put in like your own mix of stuff.
Maybe that'll be my like next project. I do like make fire cider. That'd be fun.
And then did y'all put it in the ground for like a month?
Oh, I don't know, honestly. I know it set for a while, but I don't know if it was put in the ground. So
I know sometimes when people make things like that, like fire cider or vinegars, they'll like bury it for a month. Sometimes like a moon cycle. I don't know what it does. But
it's artisanal.
I was just taking a class on curanderismo with ancestral apothecary, and they made some medicinal vinegar, and like while we were in our class, and they were like, we're gonna bury it and then we will distribute it later after a moon cycle, I think it was.
They're like, excuse me, why are you doing that?
Yeah, there is a reason, but I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you would rate the local government's response to COVID.
COVID?
Yeah.
This is me personally. Personally, I feel like I've been following the news a lot, and I feel like I've been looking at different sources, but mostly just reading about like any updates and like as far as like reopening and what the shelter in place entails, certain things that the California, state of California, and the governor has advised. So I think that maybe like a 6. Oh, wait, did you say rate like 1 to 10 or no?
I mean that works too.
Maybe like a 6 on a scale from 1 to 10. Because maybe more well off than, you know, places like New York. But I'm just thinking it's weird because like I have some family on the reservation and I'm thinking about that government as well. And I'm kind of like terrible. but here it's hard because I think so many different counties are doing differently. Like they're like, some people are like really struggling, like LA. I had a cousin down there in LA, and he's a single father, and it was like really hard on him because like so many things were closed down. So it's like childcare is a factor in that. It's like being able to work with your kids, young, like one infant and then a toddler, and just like how the population, how some areas are very crowded and not safe. So I think, yeah, let me think of it county-wise. I think in general, the state of California, the governor's office has given some great advice. And maybe the only thing that would be different is just to address things earlier or be more, earlier, being able to like say, hey, like this is what we need to do earlier. But then I guess for the county and for Oakland, I think more information could have been shared. And then I was just talking about this with my boyfriend today. Like, I think that it's 500 languages, maybe two. I can't remember if it was 2 or 500, but in the Bay Area and in like Oakland, we have so many different language groups, and we have people coming from countries where they're like 50 languages in one region and stuff like that. So it's like how diverse we are. It's like, do we actually have like the right translation services and like people that are communicating this information? One beautiful thing that I've seen is like on Facebook, some people have taken the time to translate one of those like one pagers of like, this is what you need to do to protect yourself during COVID. So you see a lot of that work being done by community members, people on Facebook organizing mutual aid, A friend of mine in upstate New York, she's been sewing masks and sending them to the Navajo Nation, sending them to Seneca Nation, sending them to me and my family and all of her friends across the states, because it's like some people don't have access to these masks, or maybe they get the disposable ones, but it's like being able to have something that's sustainable. I'm seeing a lot of communities and organizations take up a lot of this work. So I feel like that's my rating is a little bit low, or it's not high. It's like above like average, I guess, because the community and like individuals shouldn't be having to do this much work, you know? So the fact that we're having problems with unemployment, or we're having discussions over, can I pay my rent this month? If I don't pay my rent this month, am I in danger of being evicted and having to learn these things and not having the information readily available? I think that local government and federal government have failed a lot in not having that information accessible, and also not having the sense of urgency when it comes to like, okay, we have this information, like how do we respond to it? So things are being done, just not with enough urgency and not enough, they're not getting everyone. They're not making accessible to everyone.
And I would imagine that this is even more so the case with urban Native communities, particularly if members of those communities are not recognized, or from not non-recognized tribes, that then kind of the kind of grassroots work that you were just mentioning has to be done even more so, because there aren't always direct avenues from state or federal governments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, was it 20 tribes that are recognized in California? Or is it more than that? Maybe more. There are about 200 tribes in California, but only a handful of them are recognized, like 15 or 20.
I think the closest one to us, so I'm in San Francisco right now, the closest one to us, I think, is Grayton Rancheria in Sonoma. But then along the coast, no recognized tribes for like 350 miles from Sonoma to Santa Barbara. So I think the closest recognized tribe to us is Chumash in Santa Barbara. But yeah, that whole stretch is non-recognized.
That's a big number, like 200, like that's just crazy. Like only a small handful are recognized.
Mm-hmm. And it's like that in like all over the states, and then we have people that have been moved, and then there's like land disputes and that's the whole other thing where it's like you're putting all these people from different tribal groups together, and then there's obviously some community that's formed there, but then when it comes to reclaiming and rematriating these lands and reclaiming these old like traditional ways, it's like that's gonna cause conflict when you're like, hey, this is my land. We're like, wait a second, like and just being constricted to like one space, and you're like, oh, this is all you get, like that's frustrating when you're like trying to like where's my homeland even now, you know? Yeah, that's right. Hey Google, how do you overthrow the government?
I'm not sure, but I found something for it. Can you overthrow the government?
Google's talking here.
So you talked about this a little bit earlier around the fires that were lit for people who have passed on. And I'm wondering if you could maybe say a little bit more about if there are any other ways that the organization has kind of held space for people, if there have been any loss, family members or community members during this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think In general, like with that hub that we're talking about, and like students being able to go to these different centers, it's also like you may not necessarily know someone in another city or going to another program, but you're all kind of connected. It's like it could be easy as like one of your mentors being like, hey, like I think you should talk to this person about employment, or you can be friends with this student, or you can study with this student. I think it's like having that happen is like very easy, even though we may not all necessarily know each other. So I think it's just very in the Native community here and then the Bay Area community as a whole, like it's all about like connecting people, being able to like for educational purposes or professional reasons, or just like community gatherings, going to powwows or dancing, like having dance groups. There are a lot of traditional dance groups out here. I think that's a big way that we do that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like how we honor, like if someone has experienced a loss, just being able to like be there for them. And then like, if there's some sort of ceremony in that particular way, the community comes together to support them. A friend of mine actually just called me today saying that their relative passed away. Their relative took their own life, actually. So we talked a little bit about checking in with each other, and she was just kind of like, are you okay? You know, how was your week? And it was nice because it was like, I was having a bad week. And then we had a check-in, and it was just great to be able to have someone to have those conversations with. And this person I actually met through Karina. So Karina connected the two of us. And then we just talked about like how we need to talk about these things in a larger group, because there may be an elder or maybe a youth or just someone that's isolated right now, and they may be experiencing depression or other things, and it's now magnified by COVID. So and suicide are already being a problem in Native communities, and especially on reservations, like how these conversations, we need to talk about them and we need to put it out there, and in order to prevent these things from happening. Just like we're putting the information out there and the resources to help with protecting immunocompromised and elders, so that way we don't have any losses. And in general, when things are just out of our hands or for natural causes, for instance, the board member just dying of natural causes, just like having the space to honor someone in that way is very important. And it's usually just like people calling each other, checking in on each other, gathering if we can and if we are able to.
So it sounds like there are kind of in the urban Native network in Oakland, there are ways in which as communities, people come together because of the ways that they're interconnected. And that one of the ways in which folks process loss is around checking in with one another. And then perhaps as time and space allow, doing some kinds of gatherings to honor the life passage. But that kind of outside of the two gatherings that you mentioned before, that's kind of been so far what Segurite has done as a response.
Yeah. So with wellness checking, you said that you want to do like a big group wellness check. Do you think it'll be like a Zoom call or?
I don't know. So my plan for that, my friend was saying that, you know, please share this with others, and they didn't have, since they're dealing with the burial and being with their family right now, they were actually asking if I could reach out to some people in the community and then let them know about that, and then have that same conversation of like, are you taking care of yourself this week? And, you know, how's the week gone? And just putting it out there, like, hey, if you need someone to talk to you, like, I'm here to talk to you, and being aware of like this, being aware of like traumas that have been passed down, and how it's like, you know, make sure you have those conversations. So I feel like it's just gonna be like, I'll speak to someone, and I hope that that carries on. But I could definitely, it could be like one of the Seeding Hope series where we can talk about loss, or we can talk about things like alcoholism or suicide, things that are taking people's lives too early.
So actually, believe it or not, we are down to our last question, which is kind of a broader question. What resources do your members need to help them cope with the effects of the coronavirus?
I need... we've been... I don't know if I said this last time, but when it was declared, we all got together and Karina was like, okay, here's some money. Go buy with the things you need to buy. Go home. Like, take care of yourself. And then there was another day where my coworker was just like,
okay, so the last thing that we heard was Karina was like, here's money, and then you were talking about a friend.
Yeah, and then one of my other coworkers, who's he's one of the older people, so he's kind of like this like big brother, uncle figure, and we were just all, there were three of us working with him that day, and he was just like, pull out a wad of cash, go get your survival tools, and he was just kind of in his like, the apocalypse is happening. He was like, go get this, go get your canned food. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like we were all looking out for each other in that moment, and it's like at one point I like brought toilet paper to the office because like somebody was like, I can't find toilet paper. So I was like, let me bring some to you, because I went to Costco before all this crazy stuff happened and I was doing regular shopping. So we're like looking out for each other in that way. So one of the things is like having the things to like to continue with like the needs in our life. So like our food and our toiletries and basic essentials, like having those essentials was like a need that we like recognized because things were going out of stock and we weren't necessarily thinking about hoarding a bunch of stuff. So that's one thing that we like immediately, like Karina as one of our directors, and then also like someone that's older in the organization was like, hey, y'all need to get these things. So supporting each other. And then if somebody has something that like, hey, like, does anybody need this? Like we reach out to.
So I'm just gonna pause. All right.
So I was talking about transportation.
Yes. The last thing that I heard was you were talking about, you mentioned food, toiletries, essentials for members that are in stock. You talked about the work of supporting one another. And then I think that might have been the last thing that I heard.
Okay. I think that transportation, though not for everyone, some people have their own cars, and then like, for instance, I share a vehicle, and I have there's another person that does not have access to a car always, but so they rely a lot on ride sharing, and then there are times when sometimes I'd take ride share or I'd take the bus. So that we've been asked like not to do that, because just to like keep each other safe, and we've been trying to communicate it like two people living close together are able to carpool to work together, and they kind of like keep in that same bubble and work together on most sites. And I guess I'd say like transportation has been a challenge, and then I would say that with a lot of things being online and less chances to be in community with others and being in isolation, I think that one of our needs would be more resources on how to not burn out and like that self-care, and also not just from office things, but like on the land as well, like making sure we're taking care of our health there, and stuff like, you know, like don't lift things that are too heavy, or, you know, don't get heat stroke or those stuff like that. So I'd say that one of our needs would be like resources on practicing things that will avoid burnout, and
okay, so last final question. Is there anything else you would like people to know about Segurite?
One thing that I think every time I talk about Segurite, I always mention that the work that we're doing, it is, when we talk about it, like calling on everyone to do this work, we like actually mean that. And Karina often like talks about what does it mean to be a guest, and describing like, you know, you don't just go through their fridge and take what you want. So it's like translate that to natural food sources and like waterways. And then you don't just put up your feet wherever, and translate that to like developing areas and kicking people out that have been there for generations, and kicking out the native people that have been there since, well, they've been there. And how like, because of the way that everyone has came to the Bay Area and has now came to like calling this place home, those are some of the things that we should all be learning about individually. But when we say we're calling everyone there, it's like, well, there are people that are historically settlers and they can still be a part of this conversation. There are people that are considered settlers, but some people may call them gentrifiers, just moving here recently. It's like, okay, well, they can be a part of the conversation and they can pay their shit with me, just like, you know, the people that have, even if you're like six generations, I've heard a white guy in a meeting go, I've been here for six generations, or my family's been here for six generations. It's like, nobody asked you. And then recognizing like places like San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley, and how a lot of these places like are historically Black or historically Mexican or historically like having like Japanese people, for instance, a lot of different places before internment camps and on people that have been here, even through that, how like diverse we are as a Bay Area community, and how like we're all invited to this conversation. So whether you're white, or you have that white privilege, and you're a settler, or you're non-native but you're a person of color, a melanated person, or you're a native person but you're not necessarily from here. So that's something I think about too. It's like my family on either side, none of them are from here. So it's like I'm not an Oakland native, but I'm native. And like maybe you're a California native but not from this area. Like we all have to think about this conversation and how we can engage in it, and do right by like the traditional people of this land. And that's something that's reciprocal. Like the work that Karina has done for most of her life, and also Janella with their activism and like the work that we do as an organization, is thinking about like our community as a whole.
And I actually had one last final follow-up question. Because we've been talking so much about the urban Native community in Oakland, and this is the only community partner that is actually looking at those demographics. So I just want to be really conscious of, like, you know, the insight that you bring is going to be the only voice speaking about that. So I just wanted to also give you a chance to say anything about what you'd like people to know about urban Native communities in the East Bay, and the ways that they have been responding to the virus, or the particular needs that they might have to increase awareness around kind of what's happening there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the health center in Oakland, they have had, before COVID, they had a food pharmacy. So people were able to come, if you're a patient, you're able to come and get like a prescription for groceries, fresh greens and produce. So that's one way like the community need, as far as like food insecurity, has been addressed. And they're still continuing to do those things throughout the shelter in place. And the Child Resource Center, where I also work at, we have been sending out, since the shelter in place, we've been sending out garden kits and snacks to all the kids that are like staying at home. And then with those things, because we mainly are doing our programs for 6th grade through 12th grade, but we recognize that a lot of students have younger siblings or older siblings that are still considered youth. So for instance, like my nephews are in the program. One is a 7th grader. The other one is 4 years old. So like when they send home stuff and I'll go pick up their bags sometimes, like they'll have snacks in there for like my nephew who's a middle schooler, and they'll have like school supplies, plant stuff for him, but then they'll throw in some extra things for the baby and like for the toddler, and you know, make sure that the whole family's being taken care of. And they're also doing things like teaching the youth how to make their own deodorant, and making like reusable, like giving them reusable tea bags that they can put in different types of teas that have been harvested from the garden in Ramai that's shared with Suburte and another garden that is in East Oakland. So yeah, I think the, like, a lot of these needs are the same before COVID, and I'd say the big ones are having like educational tools, like access to tutoring or homework help and applications for college. Like that need has been in the community, and access to fresh and affordable food. Even if some people are near a grocery store and they're able to get there, sometimes that food isn't the best quality, or there are a lot of different things in there that aren't necessarily healthy for you.
Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to end that interview there with Najoni of the Segurite Land Trust.